Welcome to episode 8 of Confessions of a Casting Director, where you will hear advice, wisdom, and true stories from inside the audition room. I'm your podcast host, Jen Rudin. Today's episode was recorded live at BroadwayCon 2020 at my packed panel called Confessions of a Casting Director. It features a lively chat with Broadway actor Bhavesh Patel. A special thanks to BroadwayCon for hosting us. Enjoy this episode. Okay, it is so exciting to be back at BroadwayCon. I've been here in years past. I am Jen Rudin. I'm the casting director, and my special guest is, please introduce yourself.
Bhavesh Patel.
So, how's it been so far? Fun?
Yeah?
Great. In years past, this convention was held over at the Javits Center, so needless to say, coming to the Hilton in Midtown is much easier. You guys are welcome to take pictures and do whatever you want to do. We are actually recording this episode for the brand new Confessions of a Casting Director podcast based on my book, Confessions of a Casting Director. So before we actually talk about auditions and ask some questions to our Broadway actor here, I wanted to let you know I'm not selling books because I have to actually get back to my house for a dinner party for 12 tonight. but I did make some fun postcards that Grace and Hannah will pass out that have information about the book and the podcast, which is Confessions of a Casting Director. Come on in and take a seat. I'm so happy to see people here. So I'm going to talk a little bit about who I am and what a casting director does, but without further ado, I just want to read this man's bio because he is our guest, a real live Broadway actor who has been on Broadway. Bhavesh has starred on Broadway in The Nap, Present Laughter opposite Kevin Kline, and in the original cast of the Tony-winning War Horse at Lincoln Center. Off-Broadway credits include Indian Ink at Roundabout and A Midsummer Night's Dream at The Public, Shakespeare in the Park, which I saw with my husband, was an incredible production. He was featured opposite Matthew McConaughey in the film Gold and has recurred or guested on all the major New York TV series, including The Good Wife, Madam Secretary, New Amsterdam, The Mysteries of Laura, Bull, Blue Bloods, and White Collar, to name a few. So more questions for Bhavesh in a little bit. That is quite a resume. He also has an MFA from NYU. I have an MFA from NYU. And so if there's anybody here from NYU, you can hashtag that wonderful institution. And I'm a casting director. So I grew up in New York City and was a professional child actor in the 1980s. For those of you who were alive back then, raise your hand. This was back before we had the internet and Instagram and fax machines. I really found auditioning to be very stressful and would lie awake at night and pray to God that I would get the part. And if I didn't get the part, wonder why God didn't answer my prayers, and then figured God would say, why should I listen to you now when you only pray when you want a role? And I actually knew at age 12 that I wanted to be a casting director. A casting director is in charge of casting all the actors for the project. We're really a hired consultant. We're not the writer, we're not the producer, we're not a talent agent. We are brought to the project to conduct the auditions and to find the best actors to populate the TV show, the animated series, whatever it is that we're working on. So that's what a casting director does. And I just want to be clear, we're casting directors, we're not casting agents. We are often called casting agents, it's different. I knew at 12 I wanted to be a casting director because I was at a final audition for an after-school special and it was really stressful, and I looked at the casting director and she seemed to be facilitating this really awkward final callback, and she was making us all feel really great, and I thought, that's probably what I'll do. I have a photographic memory. I know who replaced who in what Broadway show. That's what I'll do. But I was only 12, so finished my acting career at 17, went to the University of Wisconsin, and interned for some casting directors when I came home on my breaks. I spent a year at Innovative Artists, which is a talent agency. So talent agents and casting directors work together. Decided I preferred seeing actors in the audition room and giving them the opportunity rather than calling them to find out why they were late to their auditions. And then 20 years ago, I really became full-time in casting. I spent a couple years casting millions of commercials in New York, including the famous Can You Hear Me Now campaign, the original one. And then in 2002, I got hired by Disney to cast the feature animated movies. And I moved out to Los Angeles and spent 5 years exclusively casting for Disney Animation, such movies you might know like The Incredibles, Chicken Little, Brother Bear, The Princess and the Frog. I then was moved back to New York to oversee the Broadway division for Disney. And my job was casting and overseeing shows like The Lion King and Mary Poppins and The Little Mermaid and The High School Musical Tour and going around the country and doing open calls and finding actors. I wrote Confessions of a Casting Director for actors and really for anybody that wants to know what it's like in the audition room. Because after 20 years in this business, I have seen so many things go wrong when an actor comes into audition. And Bhavesh can certainly share some of his great auditions and tough auditions. This book is divided into different chapters. There's a chapter on agents and managers, a chapter on Los Angeles versus New York, a chapter on animation and voiceover and commercials. So it's really designed for the actor. We'll pitch the book a little bit more later. And the parents of the actor. Actually, there's a whole stage moms, stage parents chapter. I originally pitched the book to HarperCollins for parents, and they said, make it for actors of all ages and include information for parents. So there's a really lengthy chapter in here. So without further ado, let's talk a little bit about auditions.
Okay.
So I want to hear, like, let's start with the good, and then I really want to hear the challenging for you. What was, like, the best audition for you, and what went right?
Okay, so I'll just mention off the top. So I auditioned for Present Laughter, which is a Noel Coward play that was happening on Broadway, I don't know, 2 years ago, I think it was, 2-3 years ago. And I remember I had the initial audition, and I got the part, or I got the material, and I was like, I have no idea what I want to do with it. Because the character is this character, Roland Maul, who has a huge history of, like, amazing actors who have played him. Huge, great comedians. Nathan Lane did a production back in, I think, the 80s that made Nathan Lane. And so I got this audition. I was like, what am I going to do? How am I going to make, what clown do I want to be? I had no idea. And I remember I went into the audition for the first call, and I had nothing. I knew the words, and I was like, you know what? I'm just going to go in and just let the spirit take me. And the spirit took me. And
where did it take you?
I mean, it took me to a realm of bad acting. It was a place of bad acting. But luckily, the casting director and the director, like, steered me back onto the path and just reminded me to focus on, like, what does the character want? What is he actually here for? And I left, and I was like, huh, that was not my best work, but the actual audition went really, really well. And I was like, I feel good. I didn't make a jerk of myself, so I'm going to, like, just leave and let it go. And I remember then two weeks go by, and they're like, I get a call, and I'd written it off. I was like, okay, it was fine. I didn't make a fool of myself. 2 weeks go by, and I get a call from my agents being like, they want to see you, and they want you to read with Kevin. And I was like,
Kevin who?
Kevin Klein, who, for anyone that is in our age group, is, like, amazing. You know, Fish Called Wanda. Oh, my God. Everything. He's amazing. And I was freaking out because I was like, oh, my God, what did I do that first time? And how am I going to do it again? And so once again, I just, like, con the lines, and I go in, and I'm there, and I'm in the waiting room, and I'm so amped up and so nervous. And I walk in, and Kevin is in there. And I read with a reader first. Kevin wanted to decide if he wanted to read with me or not. And so, you know, so I'm there, and I'm working with the reader, and I'm just kind of, like, you know, just kind of going. And the character's really neurotic. And so I was going through it, and they were like, can you give us 1 minute? And they asked me to leave the room, and I was like, oh, God, no. This is the worst. I just missed out on this opportunity. And all the while, Kevin hadn't said a word to me. So I'm out in the waiting room, just sitting there, like, you know, twitchy. And then they come back, and the casting director's like, come back in. Kevin wants to read with you. And I was like, okay. And, you know, and it's the type of thing of where typically when you're reading, you know, the reader is by the team, right? Like, the director, everybody's behind a table, and the reader's off to the side, sitting in a chair, typically. And I walk into the room, and Kevin is in the playing space.
With you.
With me. He wants to do it on his feet with me. And now that like throws a whole other wrench in my brain because I'm like, do I touch Kevin Klein? Do I touch him? What do I do? And and I remember we were just doing this thing of where like my character he's incredibly passionate about Kevin's character. Some people have played it where he's actually in love with him. Some people have played it where he's just like an obsessed fan. And I was kind of somewhere in the middle. And so we're doing this scene. And at one point in time, Kevin's character is asking, he's trying to get my character to leave. And my character gets very passionate and threatens Kevin's character. And I was just like so in the moment, just playing, because Kevin is just coming at me with all this energy. At that, I picked up a chair to like, I was gonna bludgeon him to death to stay in the room with him. And Kevin, I picked up the chair and Kevin's like, he's the guy.
Wow.
And it was like amazing. It was like an amazing feeling that for whatever reason that like he felt safe playing with me, I felt safe playing with him, and that I allowed myself to follow my impulses.
But also, you don't just get these big auditions right away. So maybe you can tell our audience a little bit about some of your training, how important Sure. acting training is, and then how you actually get to the audition room. Because I can tell you what happens inside the audition room, but it's really great to hear from an actor. You know, you don't just like wake up one morning and go have a final callback with Kevin Klein. nothing really happens overnight. You could be an Instagram sensation overnight, but just because you have a big social media following does not necessarily equate to talent. That's what I think.
Sure.
So how do you get into that room?
Well, so like we were just talking about this out earlier, but like, you know, I'm a kid from a small town in Illinois, a town of 6,000 people. My family never saw a play before I did like a high school play. And I just kind of fell into it and I went to college. I ended up getting 2 degrees in college, 1 theater, 1 marketing, 1 was for my mom, 1 was for me. I'll let you guys decide which one is which. After college, I ended up going to London. I studied over there at RADA. I came back, I was working regionally for a while, and my mother, God bless stage moms, my mother was like, you have to have something to fall back on. You can't just do this. And I was like, all the while she wanted me to get my MBA or my law degree, and I was like, it's not happening, Mom. And so she was like, well, why don't you get an MFA? I hear that's a good thing for an actor. And I was like, fine, I will audition for the top programs in the country.
Which are?
I auditioned for NYU and Yale, but there's also Juilliard, and there's a whole bunch of programs. But when I was coming up, it was NYU and Yale. And I said, I'm only going to audition for these programs, and if I don't get in, I'm not going to go. And I ended up getting into both, and I ended up getting a full scholarship at NYU. So I ended up going to NYU. And
did you meet your agents after? So when you get an MFA, there's these incredible showcases that casting directors and agents attend. And the NYU, Yale, UC San Diego mm-hmm. one is really a highlight for every agent and casting director, usually on a Sunday in May, and it's like a marathon day. Did you meet your agents that way?
I did. So what was awesome about like going to NYU, I saw a couple of NYUers out there, but like what was awesome was that being in the city, my agents that I am currently with had been coming to see my shows. And so they knew me more than I knew them. But then at Showcase, which is this magical, horrible time.
Magical for some and scary for others when they don't get to meet agents.
It's really hard. And like, and you know, and I got a nice selection of people. You go on interviews, you meet people. And, you know, and I would say that, like, my feeling about that is that it is important to find the right fit. You know, like, we as actors, and, you know, I'll have Jen close her ears, but, like, we as actors, we're kind of the bottom of the totem pole when it comes to a casting process. And that's true even with agents. And so it's about finding the right fit, not just taking the first person that wants you.
There is an entire chapter in Confessions of a Castinger about agents and managers, yeah, because that is the million-dollar question, right? How do you get one? Do I need one? Do I need both? Do I need one or the other? And I hate my agent. I love my agent. Yeah. He's got a better agent than I do. You know, all this stuff that we feel about this million-dollar question.
Yeah. And I ended up settling with people that I felt like I didn't have to perform with them. I got to be myself with them. And they understood that I have a huge desire for comedy, but I'm also a real grounded human being, and I do drama as well. I've been with those people for a very long time now.
And let's just be clear. So agents represent actors. They're like the employment agency. And I like to say the casting directors are like the seller, right? Mm-hmm. So they're selling, I'm buying. And I know that that sounds very, very commerce and Amazon, but it's kind of what it's like. So if I'm casting a project and I've been a colleague with an agent for 20 years and I call them and say, I'm doing a massive kid search and I need Hispanic little girls for this upcoming movie, there are certain agents that I've talked to for 20 years who I'm going to trust will send me great clients. So if you think about that relationship between casting directors and agents, we're working together. It's not them versus me. I need them, they need me. We need the actors to come to my auditions and be great. Mm-hmm. So if you just get one opportunity to get into the audition room and meet a casting director, even if it's not for the role that you're auditioning for, we want you to do a great job so that I can see you again and again. It's a long relationship. And one of the basic things that I've seen in the audition room, which is what inspired me to write this book, was a couple of basic things that I saw actors doing wrong. I was on a cross-country tour for Little Mermaid in January of 2009, trying to find a new Ariel for the Broadway production. 600 young women in 10 different cities came to open calls. And I started taking notes because every woman was doing something that could have been better. They were either singing the wrong audition cut, wearing a dress that wasn't flattering for them, coming in full mermaid regalia, which is fine, but not really necessary. And so, keeping in mind that every single audition you go on is a job opportunity, it's a job interview, and you have really, truly one chance to make a good first impression. If you're a 12-year-old or an 8-year-old or a young actor, you have 2, 3, 4 chances because kids grow and change, and today's 7-year-old who may not be ready, I'll see them when they're 9 and they're going to be a completely different person. You have one chance to make a good first impression, and I want to talk a little bit more about the audition experience to tell you how you can make a good first impression. If you go onto YouTube and you type in Confessions of a Casting Director, HarperCollins produced some really fun videos of what not to do in an audition, and it's hilarious, but they're all true. So preparation is key. And I know that that sounds really basic and we should all know that, but you would be shocked how many people don't come in prepared. And unfortunately these days, it is so competitive out there that if you are not prepared, the person next is going to be prepared. So that means if you get 13 pages at 9 o'clock at night for an audition the next day at 9:30 in the morning, you've really got to forget everything you were going to do, the date you were going to have, the TV you were going to watch, and really focus and learn those lines and come in prepared. So being prepared, let me tell you what it means for me, and then I really want to hear what it means being prepared from the actor's perspective. So for me, if your appointment time's at 2 o'clock, I want you to come to the waiting room at 1:45, not at 1, and not at 2:15. I don't want you to be too early, but I don't want you to be late. I want you to have already done everything you need to do before you come to the waiting room. Stretching, jumping, vocal warm-ups, going over your sides, putting on your makeup. I want all of that to be done before, because when you sign in, I might be ready for you at 1:51, not at 2 o'clock. And if you're like, wait, I just need another minute, I gotta, don't sign in yet. Don't show up until you're really ready. I want you to have prepared the material that we sent to you in advance. And if you come in and you say, I just got the script last night and I didn't have time to finish reading the play, if I have a playwright in the room, he or she is going to be insulted that you didn't know the words. If you come in to audition for me for an animated movie, don't tell me you love Shrek. I like Shrek, but I worked for Disney, not DreamWorks. That has happened before. And most importantly, you want to come in really you at your best, you know? You want to be rested, fed, watered, looking good, clean shaven if that's appropriate for the role. You know, really knowing, having a good day and not bringing in all your baggage, not bringing in the umbrella and all the messy stuff that happened on the subway, because we all had to take the subway. So first impressions are extremely important. And I do have a photographic memory and I do remember. So if you come in hungover from your 40th birthday party, that's not going to, you will never, ever be allowed into my audition room again because you ruined your opportunity. So I'm sharing all these things that have really happened. So I think for me, the key thing is being prepared. I'm a professional casting director, and if you're calling yourself a professional actor, you need to be professional as well. And you guys all have the internet. We didn't have it when we were growing up, so you can Google, you can look me up on IMDb, you can go to jenrudincasting.com and learn, like, oh, okay, so she's worked on these shows, so I'm coming in for this animated project. Now I know that, like, she worked on that movie. So doing your research and rigor. So preparation, that's my big word. What about you? What happens when you get an audition and it's Tuesday at 4 o'clock? What are you going to do? It's Monday now at 6 o'clock. What do you do?
Yeah, so preparation is number one. Like, you read the play, you read the script. I love punctuation. In plays, scripts, anything, because what I Jen mentioned that I've worked on a lot of TV, which is amazing and wonderful, and there are writers' rooms where people are pounding out these scripts. They're like working on them for a long, long time, and it's their baby. It's their thing. And so I know that my job as an actor, especially when I'm coming into an audition, of that I go through and, like, I have a whole color coding system with my scripts, because I have a mild dyslexia, and so, like, I have a hard time reading it off the page unless I really do my work, which has actually helped me because it makes me memorize really fast. But that is the thing of, like, I don't know that there are any auditions anymore where you can come in not off book. And that doesn't mean, like, come in and don't hold the script, but it means, like, you kind of have to know the words, right? Like, because, once again, like, to reference back to, like, the Kevin Klein thing, if I didn't know my words, I wouldn't have been in a position to follow the impulse of, like, he's going to kick me out of this room. What am I going to do? I'm going to pick up this chair. Because I was operating on a plane deeper. I was playing deeper than just on the lines. And I kind of feel like that's where everything is living right now.
And even we can talk about self-taping, which is actually the next episode of Confessions of a Casting Director. Unfortunately, the attention deficit disorder that is pervasive among the world we live in, and I don't mean necessarily diagnosed, I just mean people's attention spans to watch audition tapes. If I'm taping Bhavesh, and he looks down at his script and doesn't know his words, and I send the link to my colleagues in Los Angeles, they may just go watch the next person. Mm. Because the second you look down and you drop out of the scene, they're going to move on. Now, it's unfortunate because back in the 80s, you could just go get the script. They would maybe tape you, maybe not. There was a little bit more flexibility. But now you have to come in and show us that you are hireable for this role, 13 pages in all, and you have to do the script the way it's written. So yes, preparation, punctuation, what else? Maybe we can get all P's here.
I wish. I don't think you can. I would also say, like, it is about knowing, for me, so I'm not a musical actor. I can sing. I'm an actor who can carry a tune. But, like, I prefer doing straight plays and TV, film, things like that. And so I would say that for me, what has saved my life in auditions is knowing what the character wants. Like, what does your character want? And then, because what I've discovered is that it is our job to just simply come into the room and pursue that, right? And how each of us pursues it will be different, will make us unique. And I think that's the glorious gift that we as actors get to give to casting directors. Because, you know, like, I teach a class at the New School, and I do an exercise with my kids of where I'm like, you know, if your whole script is just like, hi, how you doing? Anyone can play that part. Right? Like, that exists in the world. The person comes in and says, hi, how you doing? But it's about, like, what does that person, character, want? If that person wants to make the other person fall in love with them, the way I do that is different than the way you do that, is different from the way you do that. And that's what's going to make us unique, and that's what's going to stand out. And so I feel like it's really about figuring out what that character wants, and then tapping into who you are and bringing that person into the room.
So once you get the part, right? So casting, and it's not just our decision, and then we endorse you to our director, we present. I always like to say casting is like, we're gonna move on to our Broadway section. I feel like casting, I'm presenting choices. It's almost like being a bartender. Here are the choices. Here are the five choices for the part. You are the director, the producer, the creative team, the playwright, the composer, the casting executive at ABC, the studio executive at 20th Century Fox. Here are your five choices. It is not my ultimate decision who gets the part. I can present. Ultimately, my philosophy is I let them choose, even though I know deep down maybe who I think the right person is, but I can't shove my opinion because that's too pushy. So you get the part. You rehearse for a Broadway show. I am so curious how you do 8 shows a week. Oh. Because for me, I'm a morning person. So if I had an 11 a.m. show, I'd be great. And then I'm done and I can get on with my day and have lunch. But knowing that you have 8 shows a week at 8 o'clock at night and sometimes 2 in one day, I think it's so fascinating to find out how, and I know you're a trained actor, so you have the training.
Yeah.
How do you do that? Let's talk first about Broadway and then let's talk about Shakespeare in the Park, because
sure,
that's probably got its own set of challenges.
Yeah. So, you know, it depends. I would say that a lot of it depends on like what theater you're in, if you're doing a Broadway play, of whether you're mic'd or not. Like, so we were mic'd for The Nap. Or no, we were mic'd for Present Laughter, but we weren't mic'd for The Nap. And so vocally, it requires a different level of push. And especially with comedy, because you can't have everything, you don't want everything to land at the same level. And when you're in a room like this, you can really kind of have vocal variety and all of that. And so you really have to like preserve your instrument. And it's different for everybody. I've worked with some older actors that are incredible, but after the show, they'll have 2, 3, 4 drinks. And I remember when I was young and I was just starting out, I was like, oh, I can do that too. I'll do that too. I'm gonna have I'll have one. And then the next morning I wake up and I'm like, oh my God, I did that. You know, and then like, and then you get on stage and you sound like a jerk. And so it's about knowing yourself and knowing what your limits are. And what I do now, I would say that I finish the play, I have to do kind of like, I have to cool down a little bit typically, like vocally, because I know that I'm using my voice a lot, especially if it's unmic'd. And so I'll do a little cool down and then I'll try to have like some sort of snack, because it is typically like 11 o'clock at night. I know I have to go home. And so like,
does every show have a different menu for you? Cause I know certainly like can you eat at 5 o'clock? Not if you're doing Mary Poppins and you have to tap dance on the ceiling, but like, does every show have a different menu for your dinner?
Definitely. Like, I mean, I would actually say like, I kind of almost always have to perform on an empty stomach. Not totally empty, but like I'll eat at like 3 if the show's at 8. And like, I'll have a nice big meal at 3 and then I'll kind of like wear it down so that by the end of the show, I am pretty hungry. And the thing you have to avoid is like getting the dollar pizza, because then you're not going to feel good in the morning. It's the same thing as drinking. It's the same thing as drinking. Pizza and drinking.
But to wake up, so you wake up every morning and you know that at 8 o'clock at night, I have to stand on that Broadway stage and give them, as I say, their $150. Now it's a $300 night,
insane.
And you paid the babysitter and you went out for dinner and you're going to see his show. We used to have this high barometer at Disney, like they need to see and hear 8 times a week, the show. So you wake up in the morning and your whole day is spent preparing, or
yeah,
does
I mean,
it depend?
It depends like, you know, it depends what else you have in your life. You know, like I have a kid now. And so like he takes up a lot of my day. But you know, like I try to carve out enough time for myself to like go to the gym, to like, you know, I always warm up.
Do you warm up at the theater or at home?
I like warming up at the theater, especially if you can get on stage. Some union Broadway houses, you can't actually get on stage. But I will find a place in the space, because I'm what people call a nester. I like to come and I nest. Like I get to the theater, if the show's at 8, the latest I'll get to the theater is by 7. Even though half hour is 7:30. And that's late. Like I'll typically get there at like 6:30, hang out, get myself comfortable, have a cup of tea, run through sections of the play, especially any sections that I feel tricky with, or like, you know, and then I'll just do a vocal warm up, do a physical warm up, and then I'll just like chill and like be in the space.
And that goes back to being prepared, right? And just sort of putting your, you know, trying to control. There's so many things with auditions that you can't control, and like with performances, but at least to get there early and sort of have your life in order, I think is a really good takeaway. What about Central Park? Did anybody in this room see Midsummer Night's Dream? So Felicia Rashad, it was absolutely outrageous. And are you, I mean, are you mic'd? What happens when it rains?
You're definitely mic'd. You're definitely mic'd, and the show goes on if it rains. Unless it's like dumping. But like, it's an amazing, amazing thing. Because it's also like, you know, when you're rehearsing without mics. And then you're, you know, and so you're doing Shakespeare. And so you're using your full voice and you're using your body. And it's a really wide space. And so the storytelling becomes different than when you're doing something in like a studio, when you're even doing something in a proscenium on Broadway, because you have to figure out all the angles and you have to figure out how to use your full voice. But then you get into the space and they're like, now we're going to mic you. So now just talk like this if you can. And you're like, wait a minute, how do I do Shakespeare like this? And you're like, you figure it out. It's amazing. It's hot. Typically they're big costume pieces, and so like I remember I was playing Theseus, and like I was in the most amazing costumes, but they were hot, and so you're like sweating, right? Talk about eating. Like I don't even think I ate those days, because like I knew I would have to get in that costume and I'd just be sweating buckets. Like as soon as you're out on that deck, it's like 95 degrees, bugs everywhere, raccoons, families of raccoons living
in
on
Central Park
porch,
of all places,
you know. But like, but it's the most amazing place to work, and like that company specifically was really joyous. Lear Debesnay was our director, and she like helmed it like a pro. It was great. Oh, I love that.
What is the craziest, and then we're going to open it up for questions. I always love to know, because I'm kind of nosy and interested, like, what's the craziest thing that ever happened on stage? Because live performance, live theater, 8 shows a week. What? Because I've seen some stuff when I worked at Disney Broadway and I had to go see our shows all the time and go visit our tours. What's the craziest thing that ever happened to you on a Broadway stage?
Well, so this didn't happen on a Broadway stage, but it did happen on a stage. And so I was doing Measure for Measure, and I was playing Pompey the Clown, and I was out there, and somehow a bat got into the theater. And I'm out there and I've got this soliloquy that's like full of Lotsy, lots of comedy, lots of timing, all my props. And like, it's very specific. And like, I was always walking a tightrope with it. And there was a bat that decided to dive bomb my head during this speech. And I have like two fears. I have fear of heights and I have a fear of things flying at my face.
I love it. That's hilarious.
That was discovered in that moment. But it was this amazing thing about preparation of where somehow I was able to stayed in character and got through the speech with this bat, and I got like the best laughs of probably my career. Because like people, like I don't even know if the audience saw the bat because it was moving so quickly, but like I was just so alive. I was like vibrating with like urgency and like reason to speak, and the audience was just howling because like I was just like, I at one point in time I literally like hit the deck. Because this, you know, he was just like coming back and forth. And I like hit the deck. And who knows what the audience actually thought. But
I love that. Like, the show has to go on. You know what I mean? And of course, the swings and the standbys are always ready to go if you twist your ankle or suddenly, you know, get food poisoning. But like, regardless, you have to keep on going and not lose your cool. And I was kind of a terrible actor, which is why I'm a better casting director. Because I just like my concentration, I'd start cracking up about stuff. But so I want to open it up for questions. And I just want to be clear that I want your questions to be really specific for either of us. And in terms of the stuff that's in the book about how do I get an agent and all of that, that stuff's all in here. So we don't have very much time. I'd love to use our time wisely. And so if you do have a question, I would just love to know your name and hometown, because I care about those things. And please ask your question. So in the back, in the orange, stand up for us if you can. Oh, that's a great question. You commonly asked. No, Scott Rudin is a famous producer. We are not related, but I'm asked that all the time. And oftentimes I say like, hi, it's Jen Rudin returning, and people think they hear Scott Rudin. We don't know each other. We've met, you know, we've circled each other at different parties, but we're not related. So, but thank you.
Have you worked as a casting director on the Lehman trilogy?
No, I haven't. I haven't. Maybe I will in the future. Mm-hmm. Next question? Yeah.
Are you able to sense their ability to handle the mental and physical toll of 8 shows a week in a 2-minute audition?
Sure. So we do read the resume. The question is, you know, how can we assess the ability to do 8 shows a week? I really read people's resumes. I'm really old school. I was trained under Meg Simon, who recently retired from Warner Brothers, and Marcia Shulman, who recently retired from being the head of Fox Casting. And these are women who taught me to look at the resume, right? So I'm going to look at your training and see. I'm assuming if you've been through a rigorous MFA program or a conservatory that you are going to have the stamina to do 8 shows a week and to endure vocally. I do want to share one story of an MFA NYU grad who was playing the bird in Lion King. What's, you know,
Zazu.
And he said to me, oh, it's really tiring. And I said, yes, but you have a master's degree and you are trained to do this 8 times a week. So A, don't complain, and B, do your job. You're going to know your stamina more than me. The reason why we bring you for callbacks, certainly for theater, is because you might have been great at 3 o'clock on Tuesday, but I want to see if you're great at 11 a.m. on Friday with the same material in the same room going over it again, because you can have a great day of an audition and then not have a great one the next. We want to see consistency. That's for theater. For film and TV, which is a completely different world, which we don't really have much time to talk about, but do listen to the podcast and you can hear more. You've also got to stay focused in a very different way. It's 5 a.m., you're getting hair and makeup, and at 7 a.m. they might film your scene, or they might film it at, you know, 3 in the afternoon. So we need to make sure that you are qualified and trained to be able to do 8 shows a week, because we only double cast or triple cast when it's young actors. Mary Poppins, we had 3 sets of Jane and Michael Banks. One was on stage, one was off stage, one had the night off. One time, the one with the night off, it's in the book, in Chatham, New Jersey, had to drive all the way in to stand by because somebody couldn't come, and he had, you know, it was a crazy story, but it all ended up okay, and your kid's on Broadway, which is great. But yeah, you have to be able to do your 8 shows a week. Right?
Oh,
yeah.
Definitely. Yeah.
In the run, Broadway run. Yeah.
My name's Katie. I'm from England originally, but I'm here now. And do you find now that with the modern age, more internet, more accessibility to everything, accents aren't as much of a problem as they used to be?
Well, funny you should say that, because I'm currently casting a video game where I specifically needed a very specific accent. I'm not from England, but from somewhere else. And I think that if you're from, I mean, it's up to you to figure out if you're going to stay in the United States to pursue your acting.
I do have an American accent.
Then you can go back and forth between the two. I do know that saying that you can do, I feel like actors can, I can do Irish and Southern and British. Those are the 3 easy ones. Let me just tell you this. Accents are really specific. It's not just British Bert from Mary Poppins, and it's not just Billy Elliot, right? There's very different, and believe me, somebody who's, if you say you can do a German accent, you better have either lived there or be related to somebody from Germany. Like, don't lie about that on your resume. I do think that if you are trying to work here in America, you might want to be able to do an audition perfectly in American, which could be anything, but just standard American, and only do a British accent if you're from there or have an MFA and are trained. While we're on the subject of lying, Listen, you cannot lie. about your training, about your experiences. Right now I'm doing some casting for Sesame Street, and oftentimes when we're doing casting, the actors need to be bilingual. And by bilingual, I mean truly speak Spanish and English. So for those of you who have watched, Nina Suki Lopez is on the show now. We cast her a few years ago. I needed to find a Hispanic woman who was bilingual, and this could be any, could be Spain, Cuba, Mexico, Dominican, it didn't matter. At the audition, after they slated their name and their height, I asked them, tell me what you had for breakfast in Spanish. And either they said, huevos rancheros con queso, no problem, or they stumbled and tried to process because somebody spoke Spanish at home, but they were rusty. So I share that story only to tell you that if it says that you're fluent in Spanish on your resume, I might ask you that question, and you don't want to embarrass yourself, because then I'm not going to bring you back because I don't trust you. So that was a long-winded way of saying, don't lie on your resume, because it's a really small world. And as my father, Rabbi Rudin, says, all you have is your name, so leave a good name, which means, hi, I can call and check in with a director that he worked with to see if he's a problem or going to be great on stage. So thinking about that. Oh, so many exciting questions. Let's go over to, yes.
I'm actually an actress with an agent and a manager, and I'm wondering what is your experience with disabled actors?
With
disabled
actors. So I just want everybody to know that casting directors, myself for the past 20 years, we have been always thinking outside the box, thinking about ethnicity, disability, asking our producers, does he just have to be another white lawyer? Can't it be? So we're really in a wonderful age right now of diversity. And so the Casting Society of America, I used to be a board member, always has initiatives for diversity casting and for people with disabilities. So we can talk more about that separately. But yes, absolutely. Yes, hi.
Hi, I'm Karen from Connecticut. And it sounds like when you auditioned with Kevin Kline that he had great influence over saying that you got the part. Is that typical when you have someone of his stature in the business that they have a lot of influence?
Well, I love that Kevin Kline said he's the guy, because I would have been like, we'll discuss it at the end of the afternoon. There's still a few more actors to see. Like, I love that he was like so encouraging. It depends on what the relationship is, you know. If a star is spearheading a project and has an executive producer credit, they may get some casting. They may get to sign off on the casting. It really depends. When I go into every single project, it's all completely different in terms of who I have to share my casting tapes with or my auditions with, and what the hierarchy is in terms of who's choosing. So it sounds like in that sense, Kevin Kline wanted to be at the final callbacks to approve who he was gonna be sharing the stage with, but that's often not the case. So you were super lucky to have that experience and meet him that way. Yeah. Yeah, with the button.
Hi, I'm Emma Davidoff. I'm from LA. And I was wondering, when it comes to in the room auditions with trained people, BFA, MFA graduates, what are some common mistakes, pet peeves that you see that maybe aren't these huge red flags but that a lot of actors do anyway?
Shaking my hand is really difficult. I have a series of columns on Backstage, including 2 years worth of Speakeasy, which is all my voiceover columns, which you can get a lot of free information there. Shaking hands is really hard for me. I oftentimes have 60 actors coming in for pilot season, and it has happened in the past, Meet the Robinsons for Disney, where something happened and every little boy that came in, I ended up with the stomach flu, couldn't fly back to LA. And I use that story because if a director says, hi, it's nice to meet you, and sticks out their hand to you, then you can shake their hand. But when somebody goes down the table, I'm the one that goes, I have a cold, because I just can't. It's not that I have a germ issue. I just it's too many people. So that's one pet peeve. The second one is to come in with too many props. Certainly for film and TV, if you come in with a phone and you come in with a bologna sandwich and you come in with a beer bottle, it's like you're upstaging your own audition with all these props. And it's film and TV. We're filming here. We're making a great audition for this. And then when you get to set, they're going to give you your beer. You're going to have all that stuff. So that bothers me. Shaking hands bothers me. I think you need to come in, do your work, say thank you so much, and leave and get on with your day. So that's incredibly important. And if you watch some of the videos I referenced on YouTube for the book, All the Stuff Not to Do, we'll talk a little bit about the waiting room, which has its own chapter in the book, because I love that. But maybe you can also tell me, for you, what you don't do anymore, or what you, you know, what your best practices are.
Yeah, so, you know, especially when it's like a film and TV audition, you're doing takes, right? Like, and you did. You got the lines last night. Maybe you're a little nervous about the lines. What I'll do, it's like, I did this thing once that I will never do again, of where I was going through and I stumbled on a line and I was like, I'm sorry. And the casting director got very mad. She was like, it was great.
Right.
It was great.
There's no I'm sorry.
Yeah, she's like, it was great. Why didn't, now we have to do it again. You know, and I was like, and then of course my heart fell out of my chest and the next take was garbage and, you know, and that was it. But it's about, like, especially with film and TV, and especially I would say with legit plays as well, of like, we all understand we got the scripts last night, 2 days ago, whatever. And when it's a play, you're going into a rehearsal room. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like there is a level of polish, but there's also a level of, I want to know that you can continue to work on this and deepen it. And with film and TV, it's not everything is shot in one take. You know, not everything is 1917. You know, like, it's like, and so if you boff a line, if you just need to take a second, settle back in, and then keep going. And if the casting director then chooses at the end to say, oh, no, I want to get a really clean take of this because you're so ripe for it, then you do another take.
And you have to understand, we have very busy days. I usually put in lunches from 1 to 2, right? So I'm seeing actors from 10 to 1, and then I'm seeing actors from 2 to 6. And if it's young actors, oftentimes until 7, 7:30 at night, because I hate to pull anybody out of school if I don't have to. Mm-hmm. So lunches from 1 to 2, which means lunch becomes, you know, 1:50 to 2:07, and I'm nibbling and all that stuff. And so we're seeing a lot of actors. There's not a lot of time. So when your name is called off that couch, you come into the audition room, you've just got to have it together, which leads me to my next really important chapter, the politics of the waiting room. I want to talk for a minute about the waiting room. Who's been in an audition waiting room? Who's been happy in an audition waiting room? It's very stressful. Well, I'm glad for you, happy people. Here's my feeling about the waiting room. There's nothing another actor is going to say to you at that moment, or another stage parent is going to say to you at that moment, that's going to make you feel good, because either they just got engaged, have a brand new agent, just got back from LA, just booked a Broadway show, had an audition you couldn't get seen on, and even though they think they're not distracting you, it happened to me several times when I was a child. The girls I used to audition with, hey, I was just in, want to run lines? The director wants this, and I just got sucked into it and walked into that audition, that callback, and blew it because this girl was trying to coach me, quote unquote, and she totally, you know, tricked me. So you've got to be really careful in the waiting room. I worked in 20 years ago, we had a huge waiting room at the casting office I worked at, and I would watch what was going on. I would see how this one ran into her ex-boyfriend and he's sitting there with his new girlfriend. And by the time I pulled her off the couch, she walked in feeling great. And then her concentration and her self-esteem was shrunk because, unfortunately, you do run into people from your past, and, you know, and it was a bummer for her. So I say, if you see somebody you know in the waiting room, you can wave, hey, Jennifer, it's good to see you. You know what? I'm going to go in and we'll meet at Starbucks in 20 minutes. Put in your earbuds. Say, hi, it's great to see you. I'm going to focus on my work. It's the waiting room. Because if you depleted your energy gossiping with the person next to you, and then I call you in, all that concentration that you just had when you arrived is gone. So it's such a fascinating topic, and I've seen so many iterations happen. I can't even get into what I've seen with parents in the waiting room, except I want to say that, you know, be a kind person and don't gossip. And social media, which we don't have time to get into, there's a chapter, Don't Tweet Us, We'll Tweet You, which is my another favorite chapter in here. That also is a big topic I'm going to do a podcast about, because just had a callback with Tom Selleck for Blue Bloods is not appropriate to be putting on your Facebook. But we'll get into that later. So there's a lot of things, there's a lot of red flags I see. I'm a really good judge of character, which, you know, I can discern and spot, you know, everything because of 20 years of basically having a retail store of having customers come in. We have time for a few more questions. Yes.
I'm Angelina. I live in Hell's Kitchen. I live here. I was wondering what your thoughts are on type. I know there's a lot of schools of thought on this. Do you feel like actors should type themselves? Do you type actors?
What do you think?
I'll say, like, other people will do that for you. Okay. Don't do it to yourself. Yeah. That's what I would say actor is that, like, I want to be able to play everything, and I probably can, and I could probably do it really well, but does that mean necessarily commercially that's going to happen for me? Maybe not, but that's other people. Never take anything away from yourself.
As we wind down, Grace is going to start to pass out some postcards, which just sort of do a blurb about the book and the podcast. We have time for a few more questions. Yes.
Hi. I'm Carmen. I live in Vineland, New Jersey. You mentioned that you really pay close attention to the resume. If you don't quite have a resume and you're just up and coming, what are things that actors need to do to add to the resume that is going to be eye-opening?
Sure. I mean, you can't lie. So, you know, studying, who are you studying? I teach animation workshops at Actors Connection. It's a great place. In the back of the book are a bunch of resources of legitimate places where you can train, and really just roles that you've played and people that you've studied with. And the resume will grow. I'm sure for you, you started pushing some of the other stuff off the resume when the Broadway credits started to come in. And it's okay. It's okay for when you're starting out. We understand. Hi.
From Seattle, but going to college in Chicago. I'm studying theater directing, so I'm wondering, as a director, what can I do for casting directors to help them, you know, manage more things, make it easier for them? What can I do?
Yeah, so the director, casting director relationship, sometimes it's wonderful, sometimes it's hard. Peter Bogdanovich, quoted on the top of my book as a recent film director I worked with, he's a legend. Just be really clear with what you want, even if you don't know. Like, are we open to all ethnicities for this role? Should she be a girl who's truly on the autism spectrum? Can I, what do you envision? Because our job is to make your dream come true, and if it's a theater project, you are the director and you are really going to have a decision. If you're a TV director, there's a lot of other people that are going to make those decisions. But I think being very clear and really trying to be open-minded, we're consulting and working together. So I want to make your dreams come true, but I also want to be realistic about what actors you can actually get for your show. Good. In the pink? Yeah, so I mean, I think, you know, what we ended up doing, and we'll sort of wrap up with this, what we ended up doing on that open call is that, you know, the girls were coming in with sheet music, and it got so crazy, and there were so many people, that finally I just had brought in women in groups of six, and had them sing the reprise of Part of Your World, because if they couldn't hit that high E, so they learned it. Then we went one by one by one by one. They sang. I then asked some people to stay who could sing it, because I realized that the truth is you could do a great Thoroughly Modern Millie, you could do a great this and this, but if you can't sing that E for me right now here in this room at 9 a.m, how are you going to do that 8 times a week? And so it actually was I learned it midway through that search that as much as I loved hearing everybody come in and sing their songs, I didn't have the time. And what I really needed to test was the ability to hit that note. And for the women who got cut, and there were always tears, I tried never to have tears, I would say, use this as inspiration. Go back to your voice teacher and work on getting those high notes to be developed in your voice and come back again. You know, don't see this as I got rejected. See it as I had a really good opportunity and I learned something from the casting director, and I'm so excited to get back with my voice teacher. So that's my sort of Pollyanna casting director for the people. But I want everybody to be able to walk away from an audition either saying it was great or, whew, next time I'll do this. Not to go, you know, be miserable and self-doubting all the time. One more question and then we're good. Do I have, yeah. Oh, why don't? That's a good one to end on.
So I have stage fright. I go through periods where I literally cannot have, like, I'll go in for an audition and I can't get the words out. And so what I've discovered is that I do like a mindfulness exercise right before of where literally it's you have to feel something You have to see something, you have to hear something, and if you can, smell and taste. But like, it literally just brings me back to my body and reminds me that I'm alive. And that if you're alive, you can do what you're gonna do. And so I literally will just like, I'll count on my fingers, I'll go like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And then I start. Because I it just brings me back to myself. I find that stage fright, anxiety, it comes up because we feel we have to be something more. We have to be something other. We have to get it right. We have to do it for them. And what I try to remind myself of is that the only thing I can truly be is me. And the preparation is about like, be the best you can be, right? Go to those dance classes, go get singing lessons.
And there will always be another audition. I think that's the most important thing too. Even if it didn't go well today, there's gonna be another one tomorrow.
Yeah.
So these are great questions, especially that one about stage fright. So as we wrap up, I would love you all, if you end up buying the book and you love it, send me a note, put a review on Amazon. HarperCollins loves to check the Amazon page to see how that's going. The podcast is also called Confessions of a Casting Director. Like, listen, and subscribe. I'm so thrilled to see such a lively, wonderful crowd for today at BroadwayCon. It was a pleasure to be here. And you can follow Bhavish at Project Patel on Instagram, and I am simply Rudin J, so you can follow me there, and good luck to everybody. You're in a really tough profession, but pursue your dreams. Thanks for listening to our live Confessions of a Casting Director podcast recorded at BroadwayCon 2020. For more episodes of Confessions of a Casting Director, go to jenrudincasting.com/podcast or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Please also subscribe, rate, and review the show on iTunes. Tell your friends, spread the word, post on social media, and let everybody know about this show. If you love this show as much as I love doing it, please consider supporting us with a contribution to keep our show going. You can find the link to contribute at jenrudincasting.com/podcast. See you in 2 weeks. Thanks for listening.